This is LBC London News.
23 minutes past four right now in the capital, and a new opinion poll shows that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are tied in the race for the US presidency, just hours before the two candidates square off in the very first TV debate of the election campaign. The Bloomberg poll gives them both 46% of the vote. Meanwhile, the stage is literally set at Hofstra University in New York, where the debate kicks off at 2 o'clock. This morning, or rather tomorrow morning, UK time. Our US correspondent Simon Marks joins me now live from the debate site. Very good afternoon to you, Simon.
Hello, Chris.
So, preparations are made, rehearsals presumably over. What is at stake for Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton tonight?
Well, it may not be overstating it to say that the keys of the White House are at stake, given that new poll from Bloomberg, which suggests that this race is now a statistical dead heat. 46% apiece, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton scoring in that poll. That will be on both of their minds when they walk onto the stage in the building that is directly opposite me here at Hofstra University in Long Island, New York, in just a matter of a few hours' time. We're expecting this, of course, to be not just a political clash of the titans, but also a cultural clash of the titans. I think it's fair to say that Hillary Clinton certainly didn't think 15 months ago that Donald Trump would be her opponent here tonight, and it's probably fair to say that Donald Trump didn't think that 15 months ago he would need to clear his diary to participate in this debate and the two others that are to follow, one in St. Louis on October the 9th and the third later in the month in Las Vegas. So 100 million pairs of eyes are due to be on the debate that takes place here in a few hours' time. It comes at a point where more than 50% of undecided voters are telling pollsters that these debates will play a very important role in terms of helping them make up their minds. And with things a dead heat, the pressure is rising, particularly for Hillary Clinton. Her campaign manager, Robbie Mook, went onto NBC television this morning and said that Hillary Clinton is going to have to guard against the possibility that when she gets out on that stage with a showman like Donald Trump, that he doesn't try and turn the debate into a reality TV show.
He may decide that this is a chance to, you know, show those chops. That's his choice. But we want Hillary to have as much time as possible to talk about how she's going to make a difference. All that we're asking from Donald Trump is that he stick with the facts, that he give clear plans, and that he have a command of the issues. That's how we think that the candidates should be judged. That's how they've been judged in the past.
But the problem for Mr. Mook, and therefore for his boss, Hillary Clinton, is that you can't really judge this debate by what has taken place in the past. This is the most unconventional U.S. presidential election that any of us have ever covered. And Donald Trump has not prepared for this debate the way that Hillary Clinton has, steeping herself in the briefing books. He's made it absolutely clear that he is ready to come here in a pugilistic way and shoot from the hip, as he has done on the campaign trail throughout the course of this election campaign. His campaign manager is Kellyanne Conway, and she is pushing back, of course, on the notion, heaven forfend the notion, that Donald Trump would ever play fast and loose with the facts or make things up on the hoof. She says no. Donald Trump is coming here to present himself as a serious candidate in the race for the White House and to reach out to those undecided voters watching on television tonight.
We're going to talk about the issues that face America. That's what the debate is. We're taking the case directly to the American people.
And you can hear from Kellyanne Conway there and from the Clinton campaign manager, Robbie Mook, earlier that the spin operations are well and truly underway here at Hofstra University. Just to my right, a sports complex has been turned into the main press room here, and it is filled with surrogates from both campaigns. In fact, even as I speak, I'm seeing Congressman Peter King, a surrogate for the Trump campaign, driving past me on a golf cart heading off to, I suspect, another interview. These campaigns are basically saying he's already won it, she's already won it, and they'll continue spinning that way until the debate ends, because they know that the battle for hearts and minds is already being enjoined here.
Let's talk about this poll then, showing that the election is now tied. It must be music to Trump's team's ears. How's he been preparing for this debate? What kind of performance are we expecting from him?
Well, look, I mean, he's been preparing for it in characteristic fashion. I mean, he has engaged in debate rehearsals, and he's been advised by people who have included the former, now disgraced head of the Fox News channel, Roger Ailes, a Republican strategist and operative long before he became a top media executive in New York. But Donald Trump has said, look, I don't want to over-prepare for this debate. He argues that previous presidential candidates have exhibited signs of over-preparation, and it hasn't helped them. So he wants to go into this very much in that sort of shoot-from-the-hip style that he has adopted up until now. At least that's what he's saying publicly. It is, of course, possible that he's saying that as part of a black operation, you know, psychological warfare against the Clinton team, who insist that Hillary Clinton has had her head in the briefing books and has been wallowing in the minutiae of policy plans for several weeks leading up to this debate. Veteran observers of the US political scene say this is going to be a political and cultural event like no other election debate that we've seen, and that many of the rules that traditionally accompany these debates and the interpretation of them have to be set aside because Donald Trump is such an extraordinary, unusual political character, a man who on the campaign trail has often adopted the language of violence, bigotry, and even incited violence at times on the part of his supporters at various campaigns across the country. I had a chance to speak with John Meacham. He's a veteran political observer here. He's currently the executive editor of Random House, but before that, he was the editor of Newsweek magazine.
I think what's going to happen, I think all three of these debates will be enormously well-watched. And this is also not an election where conventions have held at any point. And so it's certainly possible that there could be some kind of cataclysmic sort of event in the debate, some sort of exchange that could shift the dynamics.
And that's what both parties are going to be looking for and guarding against. The unforced error, the mistake, and sometimes it's not even what the candidates say. If you remember all the way back to when George Bush the Elder was battling for re-election, he, during the course of a presidential debate, glanced at his watch. It was caught on camera. It was an indication that he wanted to get out of there. He was bored. He didn't enjoy it. He wanted to wrap it up. Many people argue that that cost him votes that could have helped get him re-elected. So it's unforced errors as well as pre-planned zingers that everybody is going to be watching for when this debate gets underway at 2 o'clock in the morning UK time.
And Simon, tell us about the role of the moderator, Lester Holt of NBC, because there's been a big debate about the debate, hasn't there?
There has indeed, and that debate is about whether Lester Holt of NBC News, who's going to moderate this first debate, should or should not play the role of fact checker. The Clinton campaign say Donald Trump plays so fast and loose with the facts that the moderator should be in a position to interject and say, but Mr. Trump or Mrs. Clinton, you're wrong about that. That's not the way it actually happened. That's not the fact. Well, the Commission on Presidential Debates here, which oversees this process, has ruled that it would be impractical for the moderator to serve as a fact checker because he would need to have, as the head of the commission said a few hours ago, you know, the knowledge of the Encyclopedia Britannica at his fingertips in order confidently to be able to intervene and say, but that's not the way it happened and that's not a fact. So the commission says if Donald Trump lies, it's up to Hillary Clinton to make the point that Donald Trump is lying, or if Hillary Clinton articulates an untruth, then it's up to Donald Trump to push back. So the moderator is very much in a situation where he's being encouraged to be seen, but not really to be heard. This is, according to the commission, an opportunity for the candidates to reach directly into American living rooms, and not an opportunity for the moderator to puff and preen on camera. In that regard, Chris, this has the potential to be a very anachronistic event, a much more sterile, controlled event than some of the more raucous debates that we witnessed earlier in this season that were hosted and produced by some of America's television networks directly.
Mm. Well, do set the scene for us, Simon. Where are you at the moment? What are you seeing and hearing with just a few hours to go? Can I hear the news choppers up above?
You can hear security choppers up above. Ah. I think all the news people are surrounding me. I mean, just to give you a sense, I am directly opposite the hall where the debate will take place. We have been assigned position 49, broadcast position 49, on the lower level of what is a two-level stage that reaches as far as the eye can see. I would think there must be, I can't imagine there's fewer than 200 broadcast positions here. We're directly opposite the hall where the debate will take place. We're also directly opposite the media room where all that spin operation is going to get underway. It's a beautiful sunny day here. The weather has been very kind, certainly to those of us who are going to be spending most of the day and the night outside as opposed to inside. And the stage is set for the audience to arrive in a few hours' time, made up of Republicans, Democrats, some Hofstra University students. They're going to be told to keep quiet during the course of the debate. Not a peep, not a holler, not a shriek, not a ripple of applause until it's all over is due to take place, according to the Commission on Presidential Debates. Let me just make one final point. I drove up here from Washington, D.C. yesterday, which is roughly a 5.5-6 hour drive, and on the road I saw only one car sticker relating to this election. One Trump sticker, no Hillary Clinton stickers, and that's pretty extraordinary. I mean, that really is testament to the enthusiasm gap that exists between the electorate and these candidates. Normally by now the roads would be thick with cars carrying Clinton and Trump car stickers. There'd be yard signs all over Long Island. I drove through a residential neighborhood last night on the way to dinner. No yard signs whatsoever visible in the front gardens of residents here. There's a huge enthusiasm gap in this election, and the candidates in this debate and the two others that follow have got to find a way of trying to bridge it.
So do you think this debate is needed to reignite that sort of general feeling of apathy at the moment?
Well, I'm not even sure that it's accurate to call it apathy. I mean, you know, there are all these get-out-the-vote operations that are underway. I was actually just talking to someone I know from Google, which is very actively involved in trying to get out the vote and get people to register to vote. You know, you can argue that in this election the choices are so dreadful that actually, why do you have to get out and vote? Maybe you should stay at home. Now, of course, Clinton loyalists and Trump loyalists would take issue with that and say, but the choice that America faces here is so absolutely critical that you've got to get out and get on board for one candidate or the other. But look, this debate is an opportunity for those two candidates really to introduce themselves on a national and international scale, but it's the national scale they care about, to America's voters, and try to bring them around to the idea that one of them or the other is suitable to occupy the Oval Office from January of next year.
And I'm seeing on social media some rumours about the podiums, because, of course, the scale in difference between Clinton, who's 5 foot something, and Trump, who's 6 foot something.
I haven't seen those rumours. What are those? What are they suggesting? That there will be
two different size podiums for each of them.
I think they may self-adjust. I'm not sure exactly how that works. I mean, at some point there will be a run-through, and I guess they'll want to make sure that the two candidates appear to have on television approximately the same height. Remember that Donald Trump is now 6 foot three. He's previously, if you recall, he's previously been 6 foot two, but according to his medical records, he's grown an inch, which means that he's not officially now considered obese by his doctor.
Indeed.
Hillary Clinton is substantially shorter than Donald Trump, but I suspect on television they will want to make sure that they both look to appear roughly the same size, because otherwise it will be argued that he has a height advantage on television over her.
And just talk us through your the build-up to the debate tonight, which obviously we'll be bringing live here on LBC, well, on our sister station LBC.
Yes, we will. 2 o'clock in the morning with Darren Adam. You'll hear the whole thing live on both LBC and LBC London News. I'll be here pitching into that coverage, of course. I mean, what we're already seeing here, I can tell you these broadcast positions are very busy. I've got CBS News just above me. We've got local stations to the left and right of us. There's the world's media, of course, descending on Hofstra University. Over time, we'll start seeing some of the invited guests being taken into the hall to have an opportunity to look at the setting and the layout. It's also important to remember this is a working, active academic institution. It's a matter of great pride to Hofstra University that they're hosting this debate, and it is something of a surprise to them, Chris, because we were never supposed to be here today. We were supposed to be in Ohio, but the university that was initially selected to host this first presidential debate just a few weeks ago said, you know what, we can't afford to do it. We cannot raise the $8 million we need to secure the venue and build the media facilities like the ones that I am broadcasting from now. So Hofstra University, which hosted a debate back in 2012 between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, stepped in. They like doing these events and they think it's great for their students and their academics.
Because the scale of it is absolutely massive. I'm just looking on the television now at what appears to be the spin room where the press are all going to be. And there must be thousands of positions there.
Yes, absolutely. There are certainly hundreds of positions. I mean, the rows go all the way back from the letter A, I think, to the letter double X. So that gives you, what, 52 rows of 50-odd rows of correspondence on either side. I was just chatting to my colleagues and friends from ITN who are in there at the moment, and the BBC, of course, are here, along with broadcasters from around the world, Japan, Mexico, South Africa, Turkey. Everybody is descending on this place, and that requires a very, very substantial facility to be created. And these things are sort of built like cities. They go up over the last 2 or 3 days, and then as soon as the debate is over, I mean, dawn will not have broken tomorrow by the time this place is being torn down and all the gear is being packed away, and we're all saying to ourselves, okay, off to the next one, St. Louis, here I come. So, you know, there's big money being spent here as well, and of course that's why the broadcasters like this event. Any broadcast that attracts 100 million pairs of eyeballs is music to their ears as well.
Absolutely, they're describing it as the most watched political event ever. That's Simon Marks, our US correspondent, live for us in New York. And don't forget, he'll have the build-up and analysis from that very important debate that kicks off tonight between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And also, don't forget, Simon Marks produces our brilliant Race for the White House podcast. It's all about the latest from the US election trail as Hillary and Donald fight it out for the race for the White House. You can subscribe online at lbc.co.uk. It comes out every Friday and it is, of course, free.